Greetings. My name is James Lowe. I am the senior pastor of Bethel World Outreach Church here in Nashville, Tennessee. And I am also a board member at Every Nation New York. And I'm telling you, this is a moment that one like myself would dream of. On the stage with two of my very best friends in the world, two awesome world leaders, church leaders, and it's just phenomenal. I would miss this moment for anything in the world because we get to hang out together and do some ministry together. Pastor Ron, why don't you just take 1 minute and just bring a quick greeting to the people before we get started?
Well, thanks, Pastor James, for hosting us here, and it's always a privilege for me to be with you and my friend Pastor Rice. I always call him Pastor Rice. Now he's the Dr. Brooks, yes, of course. But he will forever be Pastor Rice for me. Anyway, we have been building deep relationships, and we're going to talk about what happened on 9/11 and then talk about not only the foundation of our church in New York City, but also our future.
Pastor Ron, I'm gonna try to do this quick, but I may jog your memory of something funny. But I was just sitting here thinking when we started about just not only the spiritual dimensions, but there was some funny stuff and some practical stuff that we might as well get it on record. But really, when we were going to go that night of September 12th, I called a friend of mine named John Rohr. Many of you know him as Coach Rohr, and he had a big, beautiful RV. And I said, look, can we take your RV? In fact, he actually was out of the country. And I called him. He was in Singapore. I said, could we use your RV? I said, I promise you, we'll take real good care of it because you're very meticulous. We'll take good care of this thing. So he agreed to let us use this RV because in my mind, I thought, I don't know where we're going to stay. I didn't know what the situation was there in New York. Would we be able to stay? So there was four of us that got in this RV and we start driving. Now we get about an hour outside of Nashville. It's almost midnight on September the 12th. And I didn't know much about RVs, but I hadn't disengaged the RV right. And so the septic tank began to rise. And all of a sudden, coming out of the back was this overflow, not the kind of overflow you want to talk about. And so we pulled off to the side of the road about an hour out, and we were literally having to clean this mess up. And everything in us at that moment, it was like you heard this voice saying, this is not the Lord. I mean, you know, you look at this. If the Lord was with you, this wouldn't happen. So we looked at each other, and there was really a moment of truth of, even though we just got started and we've got another 22 or 3 hours to go, now the carpet is just horrible. I don't want to describe it, but you're a New Yorker, so you can handle it. But anyway, so we just kept driving. So we get into New York City in this RV, and we pulled up to this one tunnel, and the police came out and said, you can't bring that in here. What are you doing? What are you guys doing here? You know, it's like they thought we were coming as a second wave or something, you know, of bringing bad things to the city. So we had to go all the way around the city. So I ended up driving. They put me in the driver's seat, and I drive around to the place where they say I can, you know, bring this RV into Times Square. And I was in a left turn lane, and somebody was on the right, and I hadn't driven this RV before, and I didn't go out wide enough because of the other traffic, and I literally hit the side of that RV against that concrete embankment and ripped the whole side off.
Oh, Jesus.
So we go limping into Times Square. I mean, if you're too young, most of you, to remember the Beverly Hillbillies, but we literally came into Times Square with sounding like we were, you know, this catastrophe moving in.
And I just want to interject that who he's describing is the group from Nashville, not North Carolina.
Okay. So true. We came in with flying colors. But anyway, I literally got out of that RV, and I turned to the guy working me. I said, I don't ever want to see it again. Just get it fixed. And I had to call John Rohr to say, look, I told you I was going to take her to that van, but something happened. But anyway, it all got repaired. But I started thinking of just the moments like that that would have been omens that something bad's going to happen. It was like, oh, look at that. Oh, you have a wreck. Oh, the thing flooded. I mean, there was a number of things just like that that you had to press through. And they're funny now. But back then, it was like, no, no, we're not going to let these negatives be our, you know, signs to go home. We're going to press on. So
9/11 was probably one of the most devastating days in United States history. almost 3,000 people died. It impacted people in estimates say 90 nations, and no one on this planet forgets where they were on 9/11. And not only were you full of shock and fear and anxiety and worry of what was going to happen next, when you start understanding the human tragedy, I mean, my heart broke. It's like even now, it's difficult to reflect on it without feeling emotion. And I want to give you a moment, Pastor Ron, and why don't you just tell us a little bit about some of the emotion that you felt on that day, the compassion when it first happened.
You know, Pastor James, I think all of us have a memory of what it was like for us in that day, and I was not in New York City. The woman who I was going to marry was actually working in downtown New York City, just across the street from the World Trade Center. And it was Lynette's journey, and she had a window where she worked that would oversee the towers. And remarkably, the night before, in her position, they asked her to lead a client team discussion, and they relocated her the night before because they had run out of meeting spaces that day at the World Financial Center. And so, miraculously, she was taken into Connecticut. And we're so grateful because the images, the nightmares, the impact that had on so many people is so heart-wrenching and heartbreaking, of course. And you didn't even really have to go through it to have that emotion or that sense of connectedness with the trauma that was everywhere in that city. I myself was in North Carolina, and I was literally laid flat on my couch and just going through it and enduring and praying and trying to pray, but just mourning and lamenting over the loss of lives and with the hope that maybe there would be some survivors, and there were just a few, as you know. And so as we were making our way into New York City, and I got that unforgettable phone call from Pastor Rice, and when I got that call to join him in New York City, I was reluctant at first. But after a while, I knew that it was the right thing to do. So I took other pastor friends from my home church in Raleigh-Durham, North Carolina, and we drove into the city. And I'll never forget, it's like yesterday in a sense, looking at downtown New York with the smoke billowing up and hearing some words that reframed my whole perspective. When I heard a voice, the voice of God, I do believe, that said, "Out of these ashes, I will build a great church." I needed to hear that, because when you got into the Ground Zero area and saw all the flowers and the missing pictures of the loved ones, and we were having those momentary breakdowns as we were walking through the city, but as we were there, we knew that God was up to something, with no idea that in any way that I would be a part of what God was speaking into my heart. I had no idea that that would happen. And we played just a little bitty part there in the city. And it's been good. We're so thankful. And we began to build with broken people. And that's the way it's been ever since.
Yeah, and really, we're here at Bethel. Pastor James is a senior pastor, as you mentioned. And at the time, in 2001, I was a senior pastor. And we were meeting in a new sanctuary now. The older sanctuary is still connected. And really, I heard a voice to say to me, "Go to New York." And that night, September 11th, we ended up in a prayer meeting. Then we had a second prayer meeting at Bethel on September the 12th. And we started driving out to New York on the evening of September 12th. And so we drove for almost 24 hours or whatever it took, and got into Times Square there around the 13th of September. I picked up the phone and I called a woman in the media named Cynthia Williams, our local affiliate of NBC News. And this is the thought that came to me after I talked to Pastor Ron, and he said, "I'll join you," was to call her. And I just had this simple question. I said, "Do you know anyone in the New York media?" And she said, "I'll call you back." So we start driving about 10 o'clock at night on September the 12th. She calls back and she gives me this name of this journalist named Alice Ree. Alice was at NBC News, MSNBC. And so when we got in, we converged on the 13th of September there. We go down to the Armory, which was as close as we could get. You couldn't get, obviously, to Ground Zero, but people were gathering at the Armory and made little handmade posters talking about the loved one or the friend that was missing, and just in hope against hope that somebody would have seen them, or maybe they were in the hospital. But Alice Reed was in charge of all of the interviews for MSNBC that were holding up those posters. And when I called her phone, she said, "Come to the Armory." We got to the Armory, and then we went down into a little restaurant that they had let them use. And she said, "What are you guys doing here?" And we said, "Well, we felt like the Lord spoke to us to come to be here, just to pray, just to be present." And Alice looked at me and she said, "I was this close to giving up on my faith." She said, "I was at Columbine. I saw the tragedy there." And she said, "In all of this, I kept saying, 'God, where are you?'" So that if nothing else, Ron, that moment for her, and of course, once we began the church, Alice was one of the first ones there to participate, and she participated for several years. She's moved on somewhere in the country, but doing great things, but still is such a story of her and her faith holding on. And I think so many times in New York, sometimes people get there, not only in New York, but when tragedy happens, people are holding on and they need somebody to show up, at least offering some kind of hope. And that's what I think we did.
That was powerful, Dr. Brooks, because I saw a little sequence there. It was a church with a heart for Jesus, another person with a heart for Jesus, that allowed the compassion of Jesus to not just sit in pain, but to begin to pray and then do an action step to heal the pain. And so taking the gospel to a broken people in a broken city and saying, "I'm showing up as a person with the love of Jesus, and I'm willing for anything to come out of it." Because you didn't know at the time where you're going to plant a church. You just were saying, as a human, "I've got to get down there," and you saying, "I've got to get down there and love people, because God's going to do something out of this." And I think that's extraordinary.
Yeah, when I felt like the Lord spoke to me to go, I turned to my wife and I thought, to show you how brave I am, I said, "Well, maybe she'll talk me out of it." My wife is always saying, "Don't do this." And as soon as I said to Jody, she said, "I think you should go," which was stunning to have her confirm that. And then, of course, Ron, and then we had several others that went with us, but Ron was my first phone call to partner. But we went, I'll just cut to this part and then we'll come back and you can give your recollection. But as we walked those streets after 9/11, number one, everyone was open. You're talking about common ground, and it reminds me so much of what we're in now in terms of the pandemic. There's a shared experience that gives us common ground, and that common ground gives you that place where the barriers are gone. It's like when you sit next to somebody in an airplane, no matter how different you are, you share common ground, and that common ground gives you a proximity and a connection that allows a conversation to happen, and a very civil one. So everywhere we would go in New York City in those few days, people were just wanting prayer. There was no barriers. It was like no barriers were there. And so we had to drive up, but I drove back to North Carolina, and then I flew from North Carolina because they'd stopped flying planes for a while. And when I got back to Bethel here, the first Sunday after 9/11, I stood up on a Sunday morning, and I said, "I don't know how we're going to do it." Now, this was obviously Ron and I had talked about this. I said, "I don't know how we're going to do it, but we're going to plant a congregation in Manhattan." And a man came out of the crowd I had never met before. His name is Lynn Kiesecker.
Still here.
Still here. Lynn came out of the crowd. He said, I think it was his first Sunday, he said, "I'm affiliated with a theater on Times Square or right off of it. I think you can use it." So really within 1 month of 9/11, we had secured the theater, and I would leave from Nashville after our Sunday services. I'd do our three Sunday services, jump on a plane. Ron would leave from North Carolina. And we did that for almost a year. And then after that, another ministry need came up in Africa, and I had to start going. I actually went 2003, six times to South Africa in the middle of a crisis there. But Ron, thank you for from 2003, picking the ball up and running with it. So yes.
You both began to lay the foundation, and others helped participate in laying that foundation. But then Pastor Ron began to continue to build on that foundation the long-term future of a group of believers that are still there today, not only benefiting from the prayers and the compassion that you guys had, but benefiting from the vision that God provided to see that city reach, this diverse city reach for Jesus.
Well, you know, this would have never happened without Pastor Rice's impulse of caring and compassion. Let's go into the storm. And it was interesting in Times Square that I remember getting, I booked 10 hotel rooms in the Marriott Marquis, which is the Midtown, one of the flagship hotels, and it was $99 a night. So that was like, come and stay with us. No one was there except for rescue people. And it was when we compared notes, like a couple days after being there walking the streets, we both had it in our hearts that without a strategy, without funding, just totally by faith, we said, we have no other option. We must start a church here for the point of sharing the good news with those who are suffering. And the whole city was just literally decimated in heart and soul and spiritually bankrupt. And God began to move and lives began to be changed. And then the new heroes became those who were building with us, and many are still with us to this day. Mm-hmm. And you guys are a hero for going the distance with us and seeing so many. We've seen a couple thousand or so who have decided to follow Jesus and baptisms, and we're in all the boroughs and have spread out churches in different areas because of a gospel movement that started out of that tragedy and started through Bethel's first impulse, and then my home church, Kings Park International Church, was the second to come, and together we began to work together.
And I want to say just one quick thing, because when you say a couple of thousand people have been baptized and saved, these are people that have really been saved. Now, we are in the South here. We're in Tennessee, and so you can, you know, people can kind of make a lot of recommitments.
Frequent
altar miles. But in New York City, the people that responded, those people that have come out of New York City have scattered around the world. And you there in New York City, I mean, God brought you there for a reason, but the impact of those lives is when you start going back and start seeing what they did when they left, or even what they're doing now, it's just phenomenal. So it's been worth, if it was just, obviously you hear it say, it sounds cliche, one life, it would be worth it.
Yeah.
It's been worth this journey. So thank you, Ron, for staying. It was easy to, looking back on it, the much easier part was to say, hey, let's go. The hard part was stay. So thank you for staying.
You know, when I hear both of you talk, I think about the scripture says, he that's begun the work will also complete the work or finish the work. So, you know, when I look out into the future of this church, and I've been there many times, and you get there and you see the miracle of diversity, the miracle of the gospel, and you see that this city has the power, is affecting the world, and can affect the world. You think, this is the smartest place in the world to plant a church or to come join a ministry work. But we know it's also an expensive place or a difficult place to live, but New Yorkers are some of the most resilient, passionate people you ever meet on the planet. I'll say, you're wonderful, but I want you to know that God has begun a work, has many more things to complete, and there is vision. Pastor Ron, would you give some of the prophetic insight that you feel that's the future for this church?
Well, I appreciate you asking that question, Pastor James. You know, first off, I borrow these words from Dr. Tim Keller. I'm sure you've heard of him. And he said that, and he said it in multiple times, but usually in a more private setting, that New York City is arguably the most influential city in the world. And that's based upon foreign policy journals and other journals and the media that's there and the educational systems and the number of international students, the impact it has on the world. And I think that prophetically that God brought us there for the nations. Presently, we have 69 ethnicities in our seven different congregations. And it's amazing that you can't, you just can't walk a block without meeting someone from another nation. Anytime I'm in an Uber car or a cab, it's going to be someone from a different nation. That's normally the first thing I ask them, like, where are you from? And we begin to talk about it, and then I'm able to put on the Jesus Film app and in their own heart language, and things begin to happen. So it's an amazing city, not just for those reasons of who's there, but also the impact, the influence that it makes. And that's been one of our great joys to continue to this day to see our precious saints in our church family make it into boardrooms that are making decisions that are going to impact everybody's home. And it comes right in through social media and into your kids' bedrooms, what's going on. And so Rice was absolutely true that the people who meet Jesus there, many of them have no background. They have no upbringing. They'll flat out use 14 different cuss words, noun, pronoun, adjective, adverb with the same word, and they'll do it, and they won't, like in the South, they'll say, sorry about that, Reverend, I slipped. There's no context to even turn on what they said or to feel bad about it. And we're happy to be there, and we're happy to see the transformation of so many lives.
Yes.
And we believe that we're just starting, and that's where this next generation comes. Paul said, I laid a foundation, and now others are building upon it. And we believe that they'll go from glory to glory.
Yeah, I'm sitting here thinking about this because really there's such a connection between Bethel and New York City and Every Nation New York. Because the summary, to summarize, if somebody said, what was the original vision of going to New York? And it was to heal the hurting and to help, just to be present. Just like at a bedside, you don't go and do a lot of talking. You just go and listen, and you're present, and your presence there is a statement. And we wanted to be present. Mm-hmm. But number two, almost immediately after the beginning of the ministry, this word came that even as nations had perished in the World Trade Center, that God was going to unite the nations, and Every Nation New York would raise up a multi-ethnic, multinational representation that in essence would be the spiritual counterpart of the United Nations. And so when I wrote the book, Every Nation in Our Generation, that was in 2002, our movement name was not Every Nation, we were Morningstar. And so the church actually began as Morningstar New York because that was the name of our larger movement. We wouldn't change the name till 2004 on a broad sense to Every Nation, but like our name was, we were toying with the name Church of the Nations. And then we settled on, well, let's just go with Morningstar because that's the name of our movement. And we want people from all over our churches to begin to rally around and to support New York. And if they're going to move there, or maybe even they weren't going to move there. But that diversity was from the beginning. And that's really when I came to Nashville back in the 90s, this church I'm a part of now, that we're a part of, was one ethnicity. And so in the year 2000, I became the senior pastor here. And I stood up, I think it was the third Sunday, and I said, look, I basically said I'm not going to pastor a white church. And this was actually written in a book called A Public Missiology by Dr. Greg Okeson from Asbury. And he actually called me. He said, is it true that on the first Sunday of your time of being pastor, you said that? I said, no, that was the third Sunday. But we began to intentionally reach out to the nations around us. Our church has, funny enough, we're not, y'all are doing better than we are. We're right at there. We're in the 60s, I believe, in terms of nations in Every Nation. But what is really what God did was he began to build, especially between African-American and white, that great divide, especially in this city. And we put these praying hands up from our church in Cape Town, put them on billboards. And we began to raise that banner of diversity and reconciliation, and that's what drew you. Mm-hmm. Pastor James, you just give a brief, because this is kind of funny. You walked in.
I know exactly what you're talking about. I had not come to Bethel before, and the first time I came to Bethel, I sat in the back in a pew, and I was unimpressed with the building, but I was becoming impressed with the speaker when I heard this. Him was telling the story about his 5-year-old son asking his mother a question, if he wanted to know whether they were black or white. And the funny thing about it was, she said, "You need to ask your dad."
Well, I saw my son's wife. That's not what I was going to say, but I was. This is the story he heard, because I told the story. I said, "My son Wyatt, I think he was 5 or 6, and our church was so diverse. And I heard Wyatt go say something to my wife, and I didn't hear what he said, but I heard her say, 'Well, you're going to have to ask your dad.'"
And that's the day, the same
and
day.
And he gave up and said, "Daddy, are we black?" And because he was around so many different people, different colors, that he was, I said, so anyway,
yeah, because
that,
it, because
when,
it's
I, when
overwhelming.
I said that, that seemed to impress you.
And it did, because it's overwhelming when you realize, I literally thought that Vanderbilt, this is not real. Vanderbilt probably is doing a study, and they've got a bunch of people to decide to come together, and they're just monitoring. That had been my narrative for so long. And then I discovered, as he talked about the universities you went through to, and we started hearing the New York story, because that had happened the year prior. I got here in 2012, and then you see the hands and you see the flags and you see the mission, and you start thinking, oh, Jesus is doing a whole lot more than I imagined. And I've been, you're invited into something that's special. And so it's a privilege for me to sit on the stage with two men that I would define as reconciled. That means that they've got the right heart from Christ, because it's not our heart for diversity. It's embracing God's heart for every nation and diversity. We're trying to become like him. He loves multi-ethnicity because he created this. He did this so we would seek him. So this is a powerful thing that that we don't just have pictures that demonstrate iconic views of what humanity can look like. We have linked hearts that demonstrate that there's power behind the imagery. And so I'm really happy about that here.
What I want to say about you, Pastor James, is that you are a magnet for that. You have this in your heart. And so our congregation now, let's say our congregation is, let's say, over half is African American, the rest you've got 60 nations, and you're very diverse people. But when people come into this congregation, you are the biggest agent of intentionality to reach people. I don't know how many times I've been in church and you're leading and you go, he said, "I don't want you to take somebody to dinner that does not look like you, and I will," and sometimes you've actually paid the meal if they'll do it.
All the time.
So I just think that's the intentionality of being in New York City and reaching out to the nations. And where I think, as we ponder the future, Pastor Ron, is that it's all about fulfilling that original mandate to unite the nations in New York. You know, we're trying to reach every nation as a movement. We're in 82 countries now, Every Nation Ministries. And we hope that maybe by the year 2040, at the rate of our growth, that we will have begun ministering in whatever form that looks like, whether it's a church, whether it's campus ministry, whether it's a socially responsible act of charity or kindness or, you know, humanitarian effort, whether it's supporting another church in another nation. We're doing our best just to be faithful to the Great Commission. But we want to see something in one city. What would it be like if in one city you come together and you could see, now there's 69, but what, you know, maybe by in a few months we could see 100. And then what if one day we saw all the nations of the world, not just gathered down at the United Nations in New York, but the United Nations in every nation? So that's kind of the dream. If I summed it up, Pastor Ron, please clean that up or confirm it.
Our simple vision or mandate is to introduce people to God, that we might know God, grow together. There is no Christian life without one another. Discover our purpose, because there are so many people living a secondary purpose and not really what God intended, but what they thought.
That's
there
good.
Were people coming into New York City all the time thinking they're going to make it big on Broadway, and the guy in the subway is a better singer than they are. It's just that stark reality of what people encounter in New York City. And for those who are called to that, they succeed at it and do quite well. And that's been a joy to watch people come to the Lord. And next thing you know, you see them on the news, you see them getting awarded, and things like that happen are really, really exciting. And then the last thing is to make a difference. And our world right now is just ripped apart. Mm. It's torn apart. It's torn at the seams. People have been quarantined. We've done Zoom funerals on Zoom, which is, it's the mental health issues, the mental wellness issues are hitting all of us, and we're in this pandemic. And then on top of that, then we find out that was just the warm-up crisis to the racial crisis and tension that we're all dealing with and feeling so deeply and care about. And then God says, I'm going to put my hand on certain people in certain churches and say, I want you to make a difference in spite of this. And and these two men that I'm with have modeled that so beautifully. And our church in North Carolina has, the church here has, other Every Nation churches have. But now we're getting to walk this out in New York City. And there are a lot more complicating factors. People live in very small places, you know, like a little 600 square foot room. People are, there's a lot more pressure. People are watching in real time the meltdown of society right in front of their eyes. And yet, in spite of that, the gospel is being preached. And that just thrills me that there are so many dedicated people to say, we can put out the good news right now in spite of this. And even in this COVID season, we've been watching people from other ethnicities and other religions, other world religions, come to Christ, get water baptized, and become a part of our church family.
You know, this has been awesome, but I can't help but sit here and think that there's someone watching this who might be too distant from the message. Sometimes the current brokenness in our world makes us miss all of the great things that God is putting before us to heal us or to restore us or to renew us or to push us out into the future He wants us to have. The first thing I want to tell you, whoever is watching, is that Jesus cares, and He has people who care. And this church was birthed because some men caught the heart of Jesus, the heart of compassion, and cared. And the most caring thing they could have done is bring the good news and to plant a church that can continue to be in that area sharing the good news. Maybe you've been unaware of the legacy of the past or the opportunity to continue that compassion and love and gospel advancement in the future. This is serving as a reminder that you matter, your feelings matter, and no matter how much pain exists, like the pain on 9/11, God can bring something amazing out of pain. So don't be fully overwhelmed. You can have a moment to emote. But I believe that just like Dr. Brooks and Pastor Ron heard something in prayer that Jesus wanted them to do to bring healing to others, I believe He's still speaking to you right now. And I just encourage you to just maybe close your eyes and just take, you know, just a few seconds. And I want to pray for you as we end. Jesus, would you actually speak to those who are watching right now? Would you let them know that no matter how crazy this world has gotten, that you will never leave us, you will never forsake us, and you're there giving us the amount of compassion we need to be difference makers. God, would you make us alive again to the gospel, that we can bring the gospel message to other people? I pray that the legacy of the beginning of this church will continue on, not just in us, but in all those who are listening, all those congregants. So Lord, let the favor rest on Every Nation York. Let the blessing and the call of this church be lived out in all of our lives. In Jesus' name, amen.
I want to say thank you, you guys, for coming, your church. And I can also thank my sending church, Kings Park. And it's been great to be in New York City, and our little twin girls love it. And, you know, and thank you guys for, you know, for owning the city, not just being there to get something on your resume that looks good for the next place you go to, but because you're praying for the peace of the city, the shalom of the city, and through your very presence, lives are being changed, and you're a difference maker. So thank you.
Thank you very much.
Together we stand, divided we fall. Let's build a bridge, tear down the wall. Let us respond to our brother's call. Together we stand, divided we fall. We love you.